You are listening to Retronauts, a part of the Greenlit Podcast Network. To hear more great shows, or to learn how you could become part of our consortium of independently owned podcasts, check out greenlitpodcasts.com.
This week on Retronauts, what a wonderful night to get caught up in Castlevania discourse. Hello everybody and welcome to Retronauts. I'm your host for this week, Nadia Oxford of the Axe of the Blood God RPG podcast. Yeah, I will be hosting occasional episodes from now on. This means if you ever wanted to hear the voice of Canadian Satan pour forth from your speakers, you're in luck, especially if it's not in an RPG context. This is all Castlevania, because we are talking about Castlevania this week. It is fall. Farmers are, you know, bringing in their crops, and birds are driven to migrate, and we are driven to rank the Castlevania games because we are all mad here. Joining me on this witch hunt is Retronauts Chief Vampire, Jeremy Parrish. Say hello, Jeremy.
Hi, you're supposed to let us come up with our own pithy names. Come on, what are you doing, Nadia? You've blown it right out of the gate.
Fail.
Okay. I'm Jeremy Nose Goblin Parrish. Thank you.
I'm very sorry about that. Please forgive me. Kurt?
That's okay.
I have been forgiven. And we also have Kurt Catala. I was going to originally call you the fire-stoking imp of Hardcore Gaming 101 and the Castlevania Dungeon, but please feel free to brand yourself.
I didn't really think of anything. I mean, I go by go by Disco Alucard online. So my name for like the past 20 years or so?
Yeah, I still think of Disco Alucard at times. I actually named this this podcast Panic at the Disco Alucard in Parrish or something like that. Okay, so like I said, we're going to be ranking the Castlevania games, and gentlemen, I think we all have quite a bit of history with the Castlevania series, but I think we'll just go over very, very briefly like how we got into the series and what it means to us. Mr. Parrish, you go first, please.
I mean, I thought the first game looked neat, so I hunted it down and bought it and played it and loved it, and then I kept buying them and playing them whenever they make a new one. I'm trying to think if there's any Castlevania games I have not played, aside from ones that maybe weren't released in the U.S. in some accessible format. No, I think I've played everything except the erotic violence pachinko game. I've even played the two-person arcade shooter that came out in Japan like a decade ago.
Really?
It was not great, but... if you've ever wanted to use a whip that is a light gun, which is a strange concept and doesn't really work that well, that was the way to do it. So I definitely have my favorite Castlevanias and my least favorite Castlevanias.
I'm trying to imagine how a whip as a light gun worked. Was it like a stiff sort of piece of plastic and it was shaped like a rope? I don't understand how it even visualizes.
I'm trying to remember. So it was kind of just like you had a light gun. And when you would aim at something, you'd have kind of like a whip slash across the screen. And the second player played a woman who cast magic spells. So that was much simpler. It was just like, you know, you point and you would fire spell beams at something. But strange idea for an arcade game. I don't know what they were thinking aside from these are desperate times and they call for desperate measures. But I will say that if that's where I had started, I would not be on this podcast today. But since I started with Castlevania on NES, I like it.
Yeah, thank God you started there and not like at Whipland Arcade or Erotic Violence or any other weird stuff that Konami's doing with the series. How about you, Mr. Kurt?
Let's see. I played it when they were hot on the Nintendo, like, but I got a Nintendo a little bit late because I was a Sega kid, but I'd rented them and my friends knew what they were. But the first one I got started on was Castlevania 3, just because Nintendo had piped me up and it was super duper rad. So I just kept on them on and off, through the years until, emulation and the internet came about. I was like, oh, I feel like writing about video games. Let me make a fan site for Castlevania. And and here we are,
and
what?
You sure did.
23-4 issue later, here I am.
Do you still update, like, sorry, it's been a while since I visited, but do you still update the dungeon?
No, it hasn't been updated since Lords of Shadow came out, and I keep meaning to do it and just never do.
I understand. I totally understand that feel. But
you've missed out on so many new games.
I know, man. Lords of Shadow 2 and that one 3DS one.
There's also the mobile game that's coming to Apple Arcade soon.
Oh.
Grimoire of Souls, is that it?
Yeah.
Grimoire of Souls. They stealthily released it in Canada, then took it away before it could have a chance to try it.
I played that at Tokyo Game Show the last time people from other countries were allowed to go to one of those. And it was okay. But the main takeaway that I got was a jump rope that is the Vampire Killer Whip. That works a lot better than a light gun that is the Vampire Killer Whip. You can jump rope with the Vampire Killer. It's pretty rad.
That actually sounds very healthy. That's Konami for you, I guess, to get you off your ass.
You gotta work up the calories of all that wall meat.
What is wall meat? The world may never know.
Just think Edgar Allan Poe, think Amontillado. The question is not what, but whom.
Oh no. Oh no. Oh dear. Well, at least it goes good with wine. We can be sure of that much.
Or grape juice in Nintendo era.
Grape juice, that's right. As for myself, I actually started with Castlevania 2. I was at a friend's sleepover, and as with many of the sleepovers I was invited to, I was more interested in the NES and playing whatever NES games they had. And my friend's brother happened to be playing Castlevania 2, and I was just really fascinated with how open it was and how much there was to explore. And I kind of built off from there. I got Castlevania 3, and I was like, okay, this is very different. What's going on? I hadn't played 1, so I had no idea that 3 was based off 1 in a way. So I was just like, okay, cool. This is still really great. It's a great looking game, great sounding game. And it went from there. I haven't played every single game. I'm not like up to your par, Parrish, but I have played a really, really great deal of them. And one of my saddest life moments is that I took Castlevania 3 over to my aunt's house, and my mom made me leave it there for my cousins, and I'm still really salty about that to this day.
Aww.
Like, why would you do that? Okay, so the question we have to ask ourselves now is, why would we even bother ranking the Castlevania games? And I was trying to struggle with an answer for myself here, and the only thing I could come up with is because humans can't leave well enough alone. We are obsessed with lists, we are obsessed with numbers, and on that front, I'm actually going to say that this particular list, I'm ranking things by tiers. That is D tier, C tier, B tier, A tier, and S tier. And the reason
hang on a sec. I'm confused here. So this is just you telling us your opinions, not opening the floor for people to discuss.
Yeah, what we're going to do is you're going to sit there and listen, and I'm going to talk the whole time. You're allowed to give me like mild applause once in a while, but everyone has to shut up. No,
this is an interesting new approach.
This is definitely not set in stone. We are here to fight very politely amongst ourselves about the ranking of this list. So on that note, let's start with the games I put into the D tier. And obviously, you gents are very much welcome to move games around, put them into whatever tiers you want. If you put a D tier game into the A tier, I might question what is going on in your brain, but otherwise, I'll let you justify yourselves. So let's start with the D tier. I don't think we want to fight too much about this, though. AKA the Rabid Bat tier, as I have named it. First and worst, if you want to call it that, Castlevania the Adventure, 1989. I'm assuming we've all tried to play this.
Yes. Played it all the way through.
Oh, you've played it all the way through?
Oh, yeah.
I'm impressed. Did you play it all the way through on original hardware? You probably did. I've seen you play Akumajo Dracula for X68000, and you are an exceptional Castlevania player. It's alarming.
No, not in the original Game Boy. I don't think I ever made it past the second level, because it requires so many pixel-perfect jumps that are just impossible to see, even if you're playing on hardware you can actually see it.
Yeah. There was a lot of screen blurring in this game, wasn't there?
Well, there was a lot of screen blurring on the original Game Boy, period.
Yes.
The thing about Castlevania the Adventure is, like Kurt says, it does require absolutely perfect pixel-perfect jumps. And Christopher Beaumont is a slow-ass dude. He moves really sluggishly. And weirdly enough, that makes it, in my opinion, harder to nail pixel perfect jumps with precision. Like, I feel like, you know, with a zippy kind of Belmont, like, you know, Simon on NES or something, he's relatively a speedy guy. And I feel like, you know, I can hit those jumps just right in the original Castlevania. But in this game, it's really rough because he moves so slowly. I feel like there's a lot of lag on the jump. Maybe that's what it is. But you like hit the jump button and it's like Christopher says, okay. There's like this, you know, there's a bit of deliberation.
Christopher got all the recessive Valmont genes. He's the liquid Valmont. That's why he's so awful. I mean, I don't think there's going to be too much argument about whether this is the worst Castlevania game. Keeping in mind, and I should have clarified this earlier, we're kind of sticking to the mainline Castlevania games, 2D in particular. That means no 3D, no like spin-offs, no Kid Dracula. So if you're talking about the mainline continuity, I mean, I feel like this is just really, really down there. So I don't think anyone's going to bump this up to the A tier, right?
This is the worst one, yeah.
It is probably my least favorite 2D Castlevania game. Yeah. I mean, if you want to get into the mobile stuff, there was that one mobile game like a decade ago that seemed kind of iffy because you had to play it with like the number pad on a flip phone.
Really?
That's not good.
No.
But yeah, I can't think of, you know, if we're disqualifying Haunted Castle from the arcade, which in my opinion, we shouldn't. If we've got Super Castlevania 4 in there, then I feel like all remakes of the original Castlevania should be on the table.
Oh, I see where you're coming from.
But yeah, Castlevania the Adventure and Haunted Castle are both just like bottom rung. At least Haunted Castle has some, actually they both got good music, but Haunted Castle has like some genuine weirdness and some really bizarre misplaced effort. Like they put a lot of effort into it in the wrong places. It's just strange. But yeah, Castlevania the Adventure was Konami getting their hands on Game Boy hardware and saying, let's do the games we normally do. And then at the end of the project saying, wow, we didn't do that very well. And it's wild because some of the talent on this game went on to form Treasure, who are just, you know,
right,
like they're revered for their technical prowess. But this game is such a technological mess. I think Konami just, I think the team wasn't quite ready for the compromises to design and, you know, the optimizations that had to be made to effectively make a Castlevania game or, you know, like an NES caliber game on Game Boy.
Right.
And the best of those early Game Boy games that kind of followed in the footsteps of NES games were like Super Mario Land, where Mario's tiny, and Batman, where Batman's tiny. And they should have made like teeny tiny Belmont, but instead they were like, let's make a normal Belmont and everything will move like crap. I mean, this is a game.
And it did.
This is a game where they know that the design is bad. And so you regularly come across health refill and invincibility items, which, you know, in normal Castlevania games, those are kind of out of the way. Mm-hmm. And invincibility is often placed in a way that's completely useless. Like in the original Castlevania, think about the invincibility jugs that are, you know, standard drops. And they're in really stupid places where it's just like, oh, this is a thing that exists, but I don't need it. Whereas here, like you are given repeatedly invincibility objects, like power-ups, I think the crosses, on the critical path. And
right,
it's because they know the controls and the design are so crappy that you are going to take damage. So they're just like, oh, well, you know, okay, sorry about that. Here's a little bit of a gimme. Like, that's, to me, that is the tell. Like, they went back after they had kind of put this game together and at the last minute hastily said, all right, this is brutal and not fun, so let's give players a little bit of a, you know, let's give them a gentle little hug to make them feel better.
That's actually funny. I never even thought of that being the reason why there's so many like life refills and whatnot around that game. That's because, yeah, usually Castlevania games are extremely stingy with life refills and you have to think very strategically when you're playing an old school Castlevania game. Okay, where can I stop and refill my health? Where's a guaranteed power up? Meanwhile, in Adventure, it's just like, oh, here you go. Thanks for coming. Here's a loot bag. It has meat inside of it.
There's also all the spots where you're chased by spikes, but since the game runs so slowly, like, mm-hmm, it just robs it of any drama. It's just really, really annoying.
You're just having to leisurely walk away from the spikes.
But because you're so slow, it's like everything is moving through some sort of thick syrup. It's like the corn syrup, you know, high fructose corn syrup version of Castlevania. And so when you have to, you know, break those walls away that have the, like, the rotating spikes on them, it's agonizing. And it's really hard to do it in enough time before you, you know, get crushed. Just because everything runs at, like, half the speed of an NES game. It's, anyway, yes, I agree. This game is poop.
It is pat poop. What's funny about what you said, Parrish, about how Konami was kind of getting used to the GB hardware, Castlevania Legends, the other game on this D tier, came out in 1997. It was also for the Game Boy, and it was also quite bad. And it had a lot of the same problems Castlevania the Adventure did. That is to say, it was just slow and not very fun. So it's funny that, you know, this was in the Game Boy Renaissance when Pokemon was out, at least in Japan, and like the system was getting a real breath of fresh air. And here comes Castlevania Legends, which is just, I just remember being really slow, really boring. And as much as I love Bloody Tears, I don't want it to be the only song in the game.
Yeah, Kurt, have you ever come across an explanation of why this game shat the bed so badly?
I have no idea. I don't think it was outsourced. It just was, you know.
No, it's Nagoya, I think. Isn't it the Nagoya studio?
Yeah, they just, I don't know, must have shoveled something out real quick.
Yeah, it's a real mystery to me.
It had a cool idea because, at this point they were sort of trying to take the lore of Castlevania seriously. So like here's the mother of all the Belmonts. And, you know, it tied it into Alucard with Symphony of the Night, but they just didn't make an interesting game out of it.
No, it's just, it wasn't, you're right, because it had like the lore and it was very Symphony of the Night in terms of his writing and that particular lore, but it wasn't fun to play. It was just, like I said, it really played like a Game Boy game from 1987, not 1997. It was mystifying to me. And of course, it doesn't matter either way because Igarashi made it an un-game.
Yeah, you know, this game was put together by the same team at Konami, the Nagoya team, whose only other Castlevania project was the extraordinarily, incomprehensibly poor Saturn version of Symphony of the Night. Like,
right.
The Sega Saturn was a 2D powerhouse. It should have been able to just take Symphony of the Night and demolish the PlayStation version. But it runs like garbage. I don't know.
There's something just funny about the Saturn. Like, everybody thinks that the Saturn is more ideal for 2D games, and it mostly was. But the Saturn doesn't support the resolution that Symphony of the Night ran at on the PlayStation. So it has, the reason it looks like garbage is because it's stretched out everything horizontally. So there's all sorts of uneven pixels and it just looks ugly.
Oh yeah, but I mean,
the
bigger problem is that it runs like trash.
Yeah, that also.
But it does have Maria, who's a really cool playable character. It's just that she's stuck, you know, in a really bad version of the game. And there's all the weird stuff like, you know, the Wizard of Oz trees and the underground garden and stuff. They turned a glitch into an actual section of the game. Like, I feel like this team tried. They added the magic system to Legends, which is kind of interesting. But it's just like, they just, I guess, didn't have the technical chops. I don't know. It's really inexplicable why their Castlevania games were so bad. But Legends is especially baffling because, I mean, they had examples of how to do Castlevania well on portable hardware by that point. You had Belmont's Revenge, which was pretty good. Mm-hmm. And they were just like, but what if instead of making it pretty good, we just make it bad again?
So exactly.
Castlevania came full circle on Game Boy. Circle
of the moon.
Dooms.
Circle of the awful moon. Actually, I kind of contradicting myself here by saying I'm only including canon games, but I found Castlevania Legend so fascinating that I just had to talk about it because the inclusion of Sonya, the implication that Alucard is the father of Trevor, the completely bafflingly bad gameplay, I just had to mention it. I couldn't help myself.
I would say I would put it above the Castlevania Adventure just because the Castlevania Adventure is barely playable, and this one is this one, like, you could get to the end of, but it's not like particularly good.
I know
we talked about Haunted Castle briefly, and I would also put that very slightly above Castlevania Adventure just because you can see it to the end if you credit feed. And this is, again, not painful, but not good.
Yeah, it's, you know, at least some games are entertaining with how bad they are. This isn't even that. This is just what?
Yeah, it doesn't even have the good music to it. That was it. That's always even the bad Castlevania saving grace.
You're right, yeah. You have the one thing that can save you, Castlevania, and Legends did not have it. So I don't think we're going to have any major fallout over the D tier. I think that's what it is. But I was going to move on to the C tier, which is, I call the Mudman tier, because, I don't know, I find Mudmen like the most boring enemies in the game. They're just like, except for maybe zombies. They just, I don't know, dribble.
Zombies at least were justified by the sisters mode in Portrait of Ruin, where you could use the stylus to like smack their heads for distance.
Oh, yeah. Great. That was actually really great. We'll, of
that
course,
justified zombies.
Actually, you know what? The bloody zombies are pretty great too. The way they gargle on their own blood. That was pretty badass. So when you're a Nintendo kid and you go into that, it's like, whoa, this is awesome. So starting with the C tier here, I put down for beginners Dracula X on the SNES 1995. And I said, take everything that's revolutionary and remarkable about Rondo of Blood and throw it out the window and you've got Dracula X. That's pretty much it. Have you gents played this game?
Yeah, I remember, like, I was out of console gaming at the time, but the video game magazines I still read just completely shredded it. Because, I mean, anybody who read Electronic Gaming Monthly or Game Fan in the early 90s, they were hyping up the PC Engine Dracula X. It just looked like the most incredible, unattainable, except for the rich kids sort of thing.
Probably Game Fan. Game Fan never shut up about the PC Engine.
Yeah, so everybody's like, yeah, Super Nintendo, we're finally going to get it here in America. And then nobody liked it. I don't think they knew at the time that it was a completely different game by a completely different team. I mean, it's made a little bit clearer in Japan where it has a different title. The art style is completely different. So
I love the box art style in Japan. It's so good. It's like, you know, French expressionist almost.
Yeah, it's really awesome.
Art Nouveau.
And so, like, as an alternative Dracula X, it kind of made sense, even though it's still not particularly good. But here, it had the same box art as the PC Engine one, and it's, again, like you said, it's everything that was Rondo Blood. You just strip out everything that made it interesting, and then also make some bad design decisions that really took it down.
Yeah, this was pretty heavy on the really old-fashioned, you know, Belmont gets knocked 5 miles back into a pit school of design. And the disappointing thing about that is, I think most of us who did have Rondo Blood in the backs of our minds as we played this, we realized, well, in Rondo of Blood, if you fall down a pit, you're discovering a whole new area. In this game, you're dead.
Yeah, the alternate levels was one of the coolest things about Dracula X, but the way they did it in the Super Nintendo one is more like a punishment. Like, because one of the branching levels is you go on a series of columns with, I think there's Medusa heads there. And if you make it, you go to one branch, but if you fall, you go to the other. Whereas, like, there was a real sense of exploration. And when you play Dracula X on the PC Engine, you're like, oh, which way do I want to go this run?
Mm-hmm.
Where they more forced it on you.
That too. Branching, like, Rondo Blood, of course, has the branching levels, the branching bosses, and, Dracula X was so much more simplistic. And yeah, you're right. I remember the game magazines just shredding it back in the day. Nobody liked it.
Yeah, I was really confused about that because I was not aware of Rondo of Blood for PC Engine. And so I was like, oh, Castlevania's back finally. It took 4 years for a follow-up from Super Castlevania 4. But then I played a demo at a video shop or something. I'm trying to remember. And I was really disappointed because I was like, oh, this feels like, you know, a step back, not from Rondo of Blood, but from Super Castlevania 4. It's just like NES style Castlevania and it looks pretty, but I don't know. I don't know that I'm really into this. So, you know, it was kind of a letdown from that perspective. It was the first Castlevania game I did not buy. Well, aside from Bloodlines, because I didn't have a Genesis, so that didn't exist as far as my reality, recognized it. So, yeah, even compared to Bloodlines, it feels like a step backward. It's not a bad game, but, you know, kind of knowing where it came from, it does feel pretty disappointing. I will say, though, that, like, the magazine that's probably guiltiest of shredding it was Game Fan. Mm-hmm. And they did that a lot with import games. And then, you know, the U.S. version or equivalent would come out and they'd be like, ah, that's crap. And someone has pointed out the fact that they did have a strong association with an importing business. So while they were gushing over Final Fantasy VII and Final Fantasy VIII in the Japanese versions, then the American versions came out and they were like, it's stupid. So, you know, there's a little bit of a question of, like, what was the ulterior motive there? But in this case, I think this was really where the press being insiders into, you know, Japanese releases and importing a lot. Whereas most people did not at that point. It was not really that common. There wasn't that much transparency into the Japanese side of the industry aside from little snippets that were reported in magazines.
Right.
I don't think most people had the context to really say, oh, wow, we got robbed. That's not cool. I think it was, you know, that was much more, there was more anger in the press than among players. And it was only later, after Symphony of the Night came out, that people were like, oh, wait, this is based on something that's kind of that one game, but also not? Oh, weird.
Yeah, that made things even more confusing, but we can get into a whole episode about Castlevania Symphony of the Night's localization and how confusing that those first opening moments are. Holy crap. Next game on this list might be the first controversial entry I have. That is Circle of the Moon, GBA, 2001. And now, this was the first game that really tried to build off what Symphony of the Night did. And I think the Game Boy Advance was an interesting platform to try that on, especially since you could not see anything in this game. It is probably what it's most infamous for. The original GBA did not have a backlight. This was a launch game for the GBA. Even Igarashi looks back on this and says, oh no, what did we do? Yeah, it's not the most beloved game in the Castlevania series. I have to admit, even though I have not been able to stand it for very long. How about either of you?
I bought a Game Boy Advance for it.
Oh, dear.
I mean, I was happy with it at the time. Like,
okay.
Yeah, the lighting was terrible, but, you know, previous to that, like, you know, the Game Boy Color games always look really bad, and here's something that kind of looked like a Super Nintendo game. So I thought mm-hmm. it was really impressive. And sound-wise, again, you know, nowadays everything sounds really fuzzy, but to hear that sound coming out of such a little system was pretty cool. It has like a decent soundtrack too.
Yeah, it's all the best hits of other Castlevania games.
Yeah, I mean it's decent enough. But yeah, going back to it, it just doesn't play particularly well. The card system that it uses relies too much on randomization. The only thing that I kind of like about it is that the Dracula battle is really hard. Not necessarily in a great way.
It sucks. It's bad. Yeah, it's a terrible battle.
I thought it was neat because like so many of the other Castlevania games, you just kind of stroll up to the last boss. And this is the same issue with a lot of Metroid games too, is that the final battle is kind of frivolous. So, you know, like the late game where you're exploring and finding all the extra health power-ups and stuff, like Circle of the Moon makes you do that. And I thought that was... Like that's a good design thing.
It also makes you farm health pickups.
Yeah,
like refills and stuff, which you can't buy. You have to get them as random drops, which is not a lot of fun.
Yeah,
I hate the final battle in this game because it doesn't play well on the small screen. The screen proportions are very tiny, and Dracula tends to appear off screen a lot, and you have to kind of predict how he's going to attack you. Even though you can't see him, and he has like this weird demon hot rod that flies through the air. I don't think it's a good final battle, but there's, it kind of gets to the weird issue with how, Nathan Graves moves. You know, this is a game for a system that had widescreen visuals and was kind of like the Super NES, but with a lot of the top and bottom pixels shaved off. Mm-hmm. So, They created a Castlevania game and said, all right, here is a screen. It's very horizontally oriented. Let's make our hero move really naturally vertically with great jump abilities, but really terrible horizontally. It like Nathan's moves, like his natural ability to get around, is contrary to the nature of the hardware. And, you know, you eventually, pretty early on actually, get the ability to do a dash, but you have to double tap in a single direction to do that.
Ooh,
so you spend the entire game double tapping anytime you want to move. And it gets really tedious really quickly. And I just feel like the control issues, the view perspective, the dim, grim graphics, they really make this game not fun to play. And then you have to grind so much for power-ups and things like that. You don't get health refills after you beat a boss. So if you beat a boss by the skin of your teeth and then die after, you know, running back to a save point, well, that's a shame. Got to do it again. I don't know. There's just a lot of really frustrating design flaws that add up in this game and make me say this absolutely belongs in the C tier.
I agree. Like, it's not particularly great. It's easily the worst of the Metroidvanias. Although, like, all EGM at the time, they were really high on this game. Like, both this and Harmony of Dissonance, like, the best 200 games of all time they put out probably in, like, 2000, 2001 included both that and Harmony of Dissonance, which nowadays, those games do not hold up. But I think it just showed how hard up we were for these types of games because they weren't really making them yet. Like, they hadn't brought back Metroid yet. So,
Yeah, I mean, I flipped out for this game when it first came out, and for like the first hour or two that I played it, I thought it was the greatest thing. But then, you know, I played it longer and was just like, I'm not having fun. I never actually finished it on the original Game Boy, and I didn't go back and actually complete it, I want to say, for like 5 years. And finally, I played it on a DS Lite because I was like, wow, this looks great. It's bright and clean and there's no blur. And also, I can use a Game Shark and hack in infinite potions, so I'm good.
You're set.
Yeah. Like, that's another thing is you mentioned, Kurt, the randomization of the card-based system, the DSS. And the biggest counter I ever see to that complaint is people say, well, you know, there's a way to cheat and hack yourself any card you want. I'm like, if your defense counts of the game is you can actually, you know, take advantage of a programming bug that wasn't intended by the designers and cheat yourself anything you want, that's not really a mark in the game's favor.
No,
honestly.
No, it really isn't. I think this was another one that Igarashi made an ungame, but again, I kind of had to mention it because it was once part of the canon, and it has an interesting past. I just think that the fact that it was a showcase piece, a launch piece for the GBA, just, I don't know, it could have done a little better, but I know Igarashi was quite disappointed in the dim visuals and the bad controls, and that's why he strived to do better with Harmony of Dissonance, and strove to do better for that, and as we'll see in a few, he mostly succeeded because we are getting on to the... Oh, I'm sorry, no. We're not done with the C tier, because I have one more in the C tier, and that is Castlevania II, Belmont's Revenge, 1991 for the Game Boy. Way better than Adventure, but still not exactly the most epic Castlevania of all time, but not something you'd hate to get as a gift from, like, an aunt or something.
Yeah, I think this is probably the right place for Castlevania II, Belmont's Revenge. It's a game that people point to a lot and say, you know, this is actually one of the best Castlevania games of all time. And I actually sat down to play it, I don't know, like 5 or 6 years ago, and I wasn't really that impressed. Like, it still plays a lot like Castlevania the Adventure. It's cool that it's got a Mega Man, like, level select, but the levels drag on a little long. It's a little slow. It's definitely better than Castlevania the Adventure, but still has that Game Boy problem. And I don't think there was really a good portable Castlevania game until Aria of Sorrow. That was, you know, 2003.
Yeah.
That's a long ass time. I do like that someone typoed on the notes. It says Caressylvania. That's the sexiest. That's the sexiest entry in the series. Dracula Triple X.
That's a sequel to Erotic Vampire or whatever it's called. That is a pretty awesome typo. I commend myself on that one. Oh, actually, I'm sorry. You know what just happened when you were talking? The cat jumped on the keyboard and typed that. Thanks, Toothless. You've given us all a laugh tonight. Yeah, so that's it for the C tier. Again, I don't think there's any sort of major fighting to be done unless, Kurt, you want to defend the case of Belmont's Revenge.
I would give it a C plus B minus because, again, it's just because I don't hate Castlevania Legends, I think it's better than that. But, yeah, it's pretty middle of the line.
Yeah, so as you might expect from the C tier, very little drama. The B tier might have some more interesting discussion because now we're at the tier where, quote, it is like the chill zombie who's falling apart but not too badly. So there we are, another chalk up for zombies, I suppose, over Mudmen. So for the first game I put in this tier, I actually put Simon's Quest because, you know, it's the quote-unquote bad Castlevania game that launched a career of 1,000 angry YouTube men. Nothing against the nerd, I think he's pretty cool. But it was, like I said earlier, it was my first Castlevania game and the one that fascinated me because it was so kind of aimless and invited you to go anywhere, and if you died, which you would, like, it would start you right where you were, which was great for someone like me who was, you know, still pretty young and not very good at playing video games. I just didn't want to worry too much about death. I just wanted to see it was around the corner. Oh, cool, it's another cool monster. I really like Simon's Quest. I'll sit here and defend it forever. I will say, though, that I talked to Igarashi at some PAX or another, and I asked him if he liked it, and he said without Simon's Quest, there would be no Symphony of the Night, because Simon's Quest is what convinced Konami, okay, maybe Castlevania can work in an adventurous context, which is what he wanted for Symphony of the Night. So hooray for Simon Belmont.
So I would say in my brain, I know that you're correct in placing this here in the middle, the B tier, but in my heart, it's S tier. I have
so many
fond memories of this game. And I had such a great, like, you know, if you put yourself in context of 1988, when video games are still kind of new, video games that drop you into a world and say, go have an adventure, figure everything out. Mm-hmm. That was exciting and different. And of course, you know, I had Nintendo Power, so the really bad sticking points I was able to get through pretty easily because they were like, yeah, listen, kids, we know this doesn't make any damn sense. Here's the answer. And yeah, those like five or six clues they provided, you know, don't actually hit yourself, your head against Deborah Cliff. You will not make a hole. You will just be taken to the hospital. they provided just enough of a sort of basis of understanding that it kept me from getting lost. And I don't know how many times I played this game through, just going after the shortest time possible and trying to explore different ways and trying to like find different things and so on and so forth. It was very entrancing to have a game that, you know, just consisted of this open, interconnected countryside where I could, you know, go wherever I wanted and kind of forge my own path. And there's definitely an optimal path, and there's it's definitely a game that rewards you for exploiting the time system and grinding for levels inside of mansions where the time freezes and doesn't count against your ending. And you know, there's also something to be said for a game where the endings are all scrambled and the best ending isn't.
yes.
But it was just so interesting. And, you know, I wanted this as a game for myself and asked for it, I think, for like Christmas or my birthday or something. And I know my parents got it for me. And then a friend lent it to me and I beat it over a weekend and my parents were horrified. They were like, we got this for you as a gift already beaten it. Now you've wasted this gift that we got you. I was like, no. I'm going to play this one again. And I did.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
But I also realized that it's, you know, a pretty big mess. And for all its ambition, it does a lot of things wrong or poorly. And yeah, it belongs in the B tier. But, you know, that's the disconnect between objective reality and I was there with my feet on the ground at the time. And there wasn't really anything like this in gaming aside from, you know, Zelda. And this was a different sort of paradigm of gaming than Zelda.
Yeah, definitely. I know exactly where you're coming from, Parrish, because it's definitely an S tier in my heart. I would even say that this was one of the first video games to really do visual storytelling exceptionally well. Like the way that the landscape becomes more and more drained of color as you get closer to Dracula's castle and you see more and more graves and just horrifying monsters. I think that was just a really, really nice touch. And not to mention the town that's totally devoid of people, other than that one creepy woman who tells you to live here with her.
I do think, like, it is extremely difficult to play without a guide, but guides were everywhere when this game came out. Like, I could go to school and get a guide for Castlevania 2, because it was, like, I mean, it wasn't a great guide.
Yeah, I think they had him at the nurse's office.
Like, you know, through Scholastic book fairs and stuff, there was always this, like, every time I go to the bookstore, the Jeff Rovin guides. And, I mean, I was a kid, I wasn't exactly going to waste my allowance on a little guidebook, but I would go there every time I went to the mall and be like, oh, how do I get past this part? So, Castlevania 2 is extremely hard to beat on its own, but the resources were there even when it came out. Although I do think it was kind of made for it, because the last time I played through the game, I used a Japanese guide to sort of help out. And just the fact that they had maps and also labeled where every location was called helped a lot.
Right.
Because within the game, there are signs that tell you what other locations are, but not the location that you're in most of the time. So getting a grasp on where to go was a little hard. And there is a sense of place in the map, but when you map it out in like on 2D blocks, like if you're actually drawing it, it doesn't really make a whole lot of sense.
No, it really doesn't. It kind of just jumps from one area to the next. And I have seen like Western versions of those maps, and they're just jumbles of pictures because they have no idea what they're drawing either.
Great music, though. Like, I mean, I didn't own this game when I was a kid, but I did rent it and borrow it. And I do remember when one of my friends rented it, I called him up, I demanded to listen to the music over the phone because that was the only way I could hear it until, like, I had a little handheld, like, sound recorder that my mom would use for school, and I recorded all sorts of video game music on it.
The way we did things in the olden days, hey, those were the times, I'll tell you that much.
I remember a friend of mine telling me, hey, I was at home and flipping through stations, and I flipped past this Mexican soap opera, and the background music was from Simon's Quest. And I believe it. I believe it.
Oh, totally. I know. I could just imagine it now. The town theme. I bet more than anything it was the town theme.
It's no, so I think it was the nighttime music, not a...
Da-da-da-da-da, that one?
Yeah, that one.
Really? What was going on in that soap opera? Holy crap.
I don't know.
That sounds like just devastating. I'd watch a spooky Mexican soap opera. Are you kidding me? But Bloody Tears, the original version, that's my ringtone, because it's just such a perfect piece of game music, if you ask me.
It is pretty damn good. So that automatically bumps Simon's Quest up to the A tier. Sorry.
Oh, you're right. That should be a good rule right there, because Bloody Tears is the best piece of Castlevania game music, bar none. So, yeah, we are all very much in love with Simon's Quest. We acknowledge its flaws, but, man, just what an interesting game. I'd love to have another one in that style where you're just not necessarily Metroidvania, maybe just a more adventure-based thing where you're, you know, just less spelunking, more exploring sprawling areas and mansions and whatnot. But at this rate, who knows what the hell's going to happen with Castlevania. So on to our next game, which is another might-be-controversial one, Portrait of Ruin for the DS, 2006. See, this was like came out late in the age of the Metroidvania, and everyone was starting to do one, everyone and their mom. And Portrait of Ruin was kind of yet another Castlevania game in that style. I still think it's a very solid Metroidvania overall, a little unremarkable maybe. I actually really like the fact that it takes place during the First World War, even if that's severely underutilized. And I do like the fact that you get to play as like the families from Bloodlines, like Eric Lacard and what's his face? The Morris guy.
Jonathan.
Johnny Morris.
That's it. Thank you. The dude with the hair. And Charlotte as well. Charlotte's cool. I like her.
I like that this game has a lot of fun with itself. Well, that sounds dirty. I like this game, the fact that this game doesn't take itself too seriously and isn't afraid to have fun. I mean, even though it does have like some real emo drama about the characters and all of this like war stuff happening and there's vampires, blah, blah, blah. It's still like, there's still a lot of goofiness in this game, even besides, you know, just the sort of anime goofiness that you expect, but you have the ability to power up your special weapons. And there's so many special weapons, including really dumb, weird stuff. It kind of takes the Souls element of Dawn of Sorrow and makes it more focused on sub-weapons for Jonathan especially. And so you can like throw cream pies and paper airplanes and you can power those up and throw like giant cream pies and enormous paper airplanes. It's stupid and ridiculous and it's great. But it also has that great duel system. And I love the way that's realized in the final battle where Dracula and Death are like, all right, we're going to take you on, you know, We're going on even terms, so they tag in with each other, and that just rules. It's great.
That was a good battle. I did enjoy that battle very much. That was very intense.
I think this is my favorite of all the portable Castlevanias. A lot of that has to do with my affection for Bloodlines, which, like you said, its connection is a little underutilized because Eric Lacard is in there, but you don't get to play as him. I like the world traveling themes. Like anytime you put Vampire Slayers in Egypt, like I'm there. Just immediately.
That's fair.
It's just like such a cool idea. I like the music a lot.
Sorry, I was just going to, you just reminded me by talking about Egypt. I love the way that it takes advantage of the dual character system by certain enemies behaving differently or having different exploits or powers against specific characters. Like Astarte has the ability to just take over Jonathan and charm him. So you have to fight her basically as Charlotte while both Astarte and Jonathan are trying to attack you. And there's the enemy who will like the gentleman with the rose who will attack Jonathan, but he'll kind of bow and throw a rose to Charlotte even as you're killing him. There's just a lot of really great details like that.
The back half of the game is a little, that's where it usually gets shellacked by fans. And the back half of the game is pretty boring. But I don't know, I will always go to bat for this game, especially because Dawn of Sorrow, I was never that impressed by that game. So this was kind of the upside for that. And I also like this game better than Ecclesia, but we'll get to that eventually.
Oh, really? Because I really loved Ecclesia. I just felt like, yeah, maybe I'm not being fair to Portrait of Ruin because I really did enjoy it. I just felt like maybe it was done by the time I got to it, so I wasn't quite as enthralled with it. But I did love the fact that the Bloodlines cast was back. I actually asked Igarashi straight out, why can Eric Lacard use the Alucard sphere? Are they related? And he said yes, but he wouldn't tell me how or what. And he said it's up to Konami to finally reveal. And it's like, well, I'll never know. Gonna go to my grave.
Alas. Yeah, I'd stick Portrait of Ruin in the A tier, I think. And I this is another one that I have a lot of fond feelings for. It was one of those that I got to play it before it came out. I was headed back from Tokyo Game Show. And as I got on the plane, Shane Bettenhausen was like, here you go. And he gave me a review ROM. And I like played that all the way back to the US. And instead of sleeping, it was pretty rad.
That's actually a good game to have on the way back, because I've done that haul back from Japan, and holy crap, I never want to do that again. But I do, because I want to go back to Japan. But better than what I did, I was so bored, I started watching Ninjago. So, yeah, I will concede. I will say I'm not being extremely fair to Portrait of Ruin. I would bump it up to the A tier if someone held a gun to my head, or even if they didn't. I'll give you guys that one. Next up is, now I feel bad because, you know, I'm mentioning all these remakes and I should have stuck them out of the canon, but here we are anyway. Castlevania the Adventure Rebirth on the WiiWare 2009. And it's basically, I said, it's a good remake of a bad game by the very talented M2. It's not very long, not very spectacular, but extremely solid. I think it's a good example of small, like, quote-unquote indie games finally starting to make a breakthrough on digital marketplaces. This was a game everyone seemed really excited for and people seemed to like.
It's okay. It's MT made three Rebirth games. There's this, Gradius and Contra. And I thought that Contra was excellent. Gradius was decent. And this was fine, but not really the best. The visuals seemed a little like cobbled together. Level designs go on a little long. It's ostensibly a remake of Castlevania Adventure, but not really. Like it takes the rolling eyeballs. One of the best things about this whole series was they got Manabu Namiki, the Japanese sound composer, to rearrange the soundtracks in the style of like the late 80s, early 90s arcade games.
Right.
And they all sound really cool. But in the game, they didn't even have the theme music from the first Castlevania Adventure, which is the strangest choice. It's on like the soundtrack album, but it's not the game. It's so weird. But yeah, otherwise, I do notice that in a lot of retro indie games, the levels are a little not paced very well. They kind of drag.
Right.
That's kind of the issue some of the more recent Mega Man games too.
Gasp.
That kind of drags this one down for me. Like, it's not something I'm really hankering to play again.
Would you knock it down to the C tier maybe?
I would say, yeah, I would knock it down to the C tier.
Okay. How about you, Parrish?
I feel like you stuck it in the proper tier here. It's very middle of the road. I like what they tried to do, but it is kind of uneven. It kind of like, there's something about the style that reminds me a bit of the X68000 game, but it's not that good. It's just, I don't know. It's there. It would be nice if they would, you know, republish it in some form so people could actually play it in the here and now, but nothing about this game makes me want to run out and play it immediately.
Yeah, that's fair. Like I said, I think it's extremely fascinating because of its role as like kind of an indie breakout game, but that's something else entirely. But yeah, I would say B minus, like somewhere between the void between the B and the C tier. So we'll more or less leave it alone and move on to our next game, Harmony of Dissonance, and that's 2002 for the Game Boy. I said it's definitely an improvement over Circle of the Moon, but still not quite there, if you know what I mean. It was a good base for Area of Sorrow, though, which we're going to get to.
I think it's an improvement over Circle, but not drastic. It feels and looks better, but design-wise, it just drags and drags and drags.
Yeah, it's definitely not the best of the Metroidvania Castlevanias, which is redundant, I suppose. But I thought I'd just kind of put it here to give it a home. What do you think, Parrish?
Yeah, I enjoyed this at the time because it was better than Circle of the Moon and was easier to see and, you know, had some interesting ideas. I liked the magic skill combo system. I thought that was kind of like the DSS, but better and felt more in keeping with Castlevania. But it's kind of hard to go back to. The way the two castles are fused together feels very confusing, and it is really difficult to navigate the game as a result. But, you know, I still did enjoy it. But I would say B tier is proper. It's middle of the road.
Yeah, so more. We'll just kind of keep it where it is and let it keep sleeping, because we are moving on to the A tier, a.k.a. the sexy vampire who bathes in blood tier, which is a name I'm quite proud of. And it's quite apropos, because we're starting with Castlevania Bloodlines, 1994 for the Genesis. I was a very, very much a latecomer to this game. How about you, gentlemen?
I rented it, and I beat it. I enjoyed it a lot.
You were a Sega kid and the Castlevania dungeon guy, and you only rented Bloodlines? I feel like everything I know is a lie.
Yeah.
I did grow up rich. I did buy everything.
You gotta make it count, though. Okay. Yeah. Fair enough.
True.
Yeah, I came into this one late myself, but really, really like it. I've never finished it. I need to, but it's got some really cool ideas. The characters are interesting because they're actually pretty similar in terms of handling compared to like Richter and Maria or something.
Yeah.
Or Charlotte and Jonathan. But there's still some significant differences, and, you know, it does affect how you play.
Eric plays really cool. John always handled strangely in this game. Maybe the fact that he was left-handed, or just his animations always felt a little off.
Are you speaking crap about lefties now, Kurt? Or am I going to have to like kick you off the show?
They're so sinister.
You can get his stuff from Ned Flanders, Vampire Hunting Store.
He can make a lot of money if he did that.
Welcome to the Leftorium.
Well, yeah, I love the globe-trotting theme of this game. Just because, you know, the castle setting just kind of, you know, grows old after a while. So the fact that it was, you know, set in France and in Germany, and it took place in the early 20th century, you know, Elizabeth Bartley was a really cool antagonist, even though Dracula shows up at the end anyway.
Of course.
Lots of soundtrack was fantastic. I don't think it was Michiru Yamane's first soundtrack overall, but it was her first one for Castlevania.
Yep.
And it's brilliant. I think it feels better than Super Castlevania 4. The only knock against it is it's a little short. There's only 6 levels. And they're kind of long levels, but compared to especially Dracula X, it's, you know, over a little too quickly. But no, otherwise, I love this game.
I think one of the things that... Oh, sorry, Parrish, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, I feel like every level counts, and there's enough of a, you know, of a difference in how the characters handle and how you get around the stages to justify playing it twice. So that works for me.
I like the fact that it's just so different from any other Castlevania series, or sorry, any other Castlevania game in this list. It has its very much its own look, its own feel, its own movement, its own soundtrack, because, yeah, even though you hear a lot of familiar tunes in that soundtrack, they're all remixed in a way that sounds very Genesis, very 90s attitude energy. And it's just, it's a very hard game. I'd say some people might even say it's unfair at points, which I don't really know enough to get into the mechanics and argue every little detail of them. But I will say that I love how Eric Lacard like kind of previews what was coming for the Castlevania series in the way of you don't have to be stuck with a whip. You can choose whip or sword or gun or whatever down the line. I think it was really a cool breakaway for the series. And if I'm not mistaken, can't Eric like freaking pogo off his spear?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty freaking amazing.
Oh, and that was all really advertised as being bloody too, because there's, you know, the pool of blood on the title screen when you zap a zombie, the torso falls off, and when you when Eric dies, the spear flies dramatically there and stabs him.
I was about to say he has the most hardcore death animation of any character in 16-bit history.
Oh, the prototype for that game, which was shown on eBay like 20 years ago, someone finally dumped the last known revision of it. And you know how John dies in this game? He just kind of fades away.
Yeah.
In that version, he actually turns into bones like Arthur from Ghouls and Ghosts.
Oh, and that's wicked.
I guess they must have figured out maybe a little bit too hardcore. And
that's really funny because the title screen, like you said, is literally a pool of blood.
Yeah. It's too much for Europe, though.
Yeah, I was going to say too intense for the prim and proper UK.
Oh, right. There was that whole thing going on because they had like a title screen with water or something that made no sense.
It was Elizabeth Bathory's original bath. It was just the water that she dumped out in favor of blood.
Or she was really filthy that one day and just got into the bath afterwards and said, oh boy, what did I leave behind? So yeah, great game. Most epic death scene ever. I'm just laughing that they didn't leave in the skeleton, but they left in the fact that the spear never fails to go way, way up and never fails to land right on Eric Lecard as if God hates him specifically. It's so perfect.
It's so tragic.
It's like, this is what God thinks of you hunting vampires, Eric Lecard.
This
Maybe
is
go
why
home.
You're supposed to use a whip.
There
no
you
one's
go.
Ever impaled themselves on a whip.
That's the Belmont ancestors just telling Eric Lecard what they think of him. Kurt's not going to agree with the next game because I put it down as Castlevania Dawn of Sorrow, which was for the DS in 2005. I think that while Area of Sorrow touched up a lot of what was wrong with Symphony of the Night, which wasn't much but was significant, Dawn of Sorrow kind of touched up a lot of Area of Sorrow's problems. It's also a rare example of another Castlevania fit game following like absolutely directly off another one. I think maybe one thing that sticks out in my mind in terms of this game's flaws, though, is man, I hate those character portraits. Holy crap.
Yeah.
Let me offer a counterpoint. Who cares? It's fine.
But coming off of Symphony of the Night and those portraits, yeah, just...
It's a downgrade, but, you know, it's fine. I know which characters they are. They're, you know, the story they're telling. It's kind of appropriate to it. It's very anime. Yeah, I don't care. Like, it still plays great, and outside of the character portraits, it looks really good. Mm-hmm. It was just so astounding to see this on my DS, because it was really like a high-end PlayStation 1 2D game, or Saturn yes. 2D game, playing on DS. And at the time, you know, DS was still kind of... It was 2005, so it was only a year old, and people were like, why do I own this system? I don't have Mario Kart or Nintendogs yet. And Dawn of Sorrow was there to say... This fools, this is why you own it. It was very, very satisfying, very impressive, and very playable, very replayable because of it just has multiple layers of replayability.
Yeah, I remember being really impressed by certain touches that like really made me realize, okay, this is a different class of visuals. Like I remember jumping on the snow-covered car in the first level and the snow would fall off like in sheets. I thought that was a really, really nice touch. And the game was kind of full of those little graphical touches. I will say, though, that glyph drawing system, which Nintendo kind of forced on everyone so that everyone was using the stylus, it was just so stupid. I got hung up on it so many times.
This is that every single console that I bought, at least when I was younger, I would only get when a new Castlevania game came out. So I bought this one. I forget. It was like a year or two. I can't remember. But visually, yeah, it was an improvement over Area. But sound, I didn't like most of the music at all. At this point, it was kind of... Like, basically just Area of Sorrow, but again, I didn't feel like there were enough new interesting areas or anything. The art, again, not great, but we did get an anime intro out of it, so that was pretty cool. The post-game with all the Castlevania characters, though, that was, I think, the saving grace of this game.
Yeah, that's right. Even,
we didn't get a grand analog, we still got Alucard back, and we got to play as Yoko Belnades, so that was pretty cool.
Yeah, they didn't give us Hammer. They were supposed to give us Hammer, but even so, I still love it. And the ending where you take on Soma and he does the Dracula thing, it's
that was awesome. Holy crap.
Yeah,
that's
cool.
That was me yelling at the screen. Is this also the one where you fight Abaddon? Because I love that boss fight. And ironically, I can't remember which game it was from, Area or this one.
I think it is this one because the end game Area was pretty cool. I remember being impressed by it more than most of the rest of the game.
Yeah.
Just very weird.
Yeah, it was a very strange area. I just remember the background for that fight was just that kind of tree, that single tree, like kind of in a permanent frozen stance, like just blowing in the wind. It would just creep me out. And that was a great boss fight. I love that so much. One last thing I would say, though, is I do wish this game was more accessible because, holy crap, you can't, if you don't have a DS, you're not playing it.
It also is infamous for that. It's one of the only ones I've seen with that Konami Classics line where it's like the framed version of the box art.
Oh, that was so awful. Why did that happen? Oh, my God. That was almost as bad as the old Master System games with the guy holding the card.
Yeah.
Oh, when you say bad, you mean great.
Okay, you're right. That was an achievement of artistry right there. But yeah, Dawn of Sorrow, Kurt, if you want to change it out here with Portrait of Ruin, I won't hold it against you. I totally understand where you're coming from, because I do remember this was the first game where I started to realize, okay, are we doing this again? When I entered a game, an area that was obviously the underground, and they called it like Underground Hell or something really stupid like that. And it's like, oh, Underground Hell, as opposed to Sky Hell, I suppose. Thanks for clearing that up, Konami.
Yeah, that's basically what I'd do, just swap the two.
Okay, that's fair enough. Next game was harder for me to place because it was Castlevania, NES 1996. I call it the Boss Vampire. It pretty much is. This was the game that started it all. And even playing it now, as Parrish has covered many times in his wonderful series, like NES Works and whatnot, even though it's old, it still plays really well. And the only reason I wouldn't rank it higher is because I still think, say, Castlevania 3 improves upon it. And it might be the more fun game to play, but it is absolutely a game you should like just sit down and play anytime if you're a retro fan.
I would put this in the same category as a handful of other games like Ms. Pac-Man, Galaga, Tetris, that is just like this game is perfect for the level of technology it has, for the time that it came out, and for what it sets out to do. Like, this, you know, sets out to be a 6-stage action game, kind of in the Ghosts and Goblins vein, with a sort of ooky spooky horror movie kind of referentialism to it. And it does all of those things perfectly. It's not the best Castlevania game. It's not the deepest Castlevania game for sure. But, you know, within the sort of limited boundaries of what its creators wanted to do to create, I can't really see this game doing that any better. So you can add to this game, you can give it new mechanics, you can make it adventuresome, whatever. But if you just want this tightly crafted, perfectly controlling, thoughtfully balanced, challenging but not impossible, little compact action game, this is it. This is the one.
Yeah, and while researching this piece, like I was a kind of an latecomer to the NES. So I played Castlevania very late in the NES's lifespan. Looking back and seeing and remembering, wow, this was 1986. This was a game from 1986. The Famicom was barely a blip. Like it was just incredible that they put this together with what they had.
It's aged exceedingly well. Yeah. Like everything Parrish has said is I could agree with completely.
Yeah, compare this to some of its 1986 Famicom contemporaries, and you might see games with more ambition, but do they play this well? Like, you know, Wing of Medulla or Atlantis No Nazo or Challenger or things like that, like, they're pretty rough. Whereas this is just like, it's right there. It's so spot on. And even Konami's other stuff from this era, like Russian Attack, just didn't have this level of craftsmanship and perfection. It's a singular work. It's very impressive. And I don't say this out of nostalgia. I mean, I definitely have played this game a lot, but it's one that I can go back to and view objectively and just say, like, they really nailed it. And there are older Castlevania games that I loved at the time that I can go back to and say, well, they didn't get this quite right. Like Castlevania 4, I don't think is actually that great. Whereas this game, like, it just nails everything that it sets out to do perfectly. And later games would build on this and improve. But, you know, again, if you take this in the context of the era and the kind of the design spec, this does exactly what it's supposed to do. It's really, really good.
If I may propose a small divergence, how do you think it compares to the X68000 game? Because that's basically an expanded remake.
I think this is better. I think the X68000 game is pretty awesome, but it's also full of some really cheap bullshit. Like that raft ride with the merman and the raft was just exploding into tiny pieces. It really is a memorization fest in a way that this isn't. Like this game has a rhythm to it. That's what really impresses me about Castlevania. It has a rhythm that you get from a very limited handful of classic games. Like this has it. Ninja Gaiden on NES has it, even though that has some real BS too. It has this flow to it and everything fits together really well. And the X68000 game does not quite have that, but it does add some really cool stuff. Like I love the tactical choice of, do I carry the laurel around and have, you know, the opportunity for healing, or do I give up on the laurel and go with a subweapon and hope that I can deal more damage that way than I absorb in return? Like there's some really cool trade-offs, and, you know, obviously stuff like the werewolf battle where it's ripping pieces of mortar and even the hands off a clock tower and throwing them at you as projectiles is so, so cool. Like set pieces, it just can't be topped. I even like the way it redeems elements of Haunted Castle. Like you're in the courtyard and you have the trees that kind of like a thing pops out at you and goes all googly googly at you. Like it has elements that clearly came from Haunted Castle, but they don't suck. So, you know, I think that's that the X68000 game is a great game. I just don't think it captures this, you know, Simon Belmont's journey through Castlevania quite as well as the original Castlevania. It's just not as pure and lean, but, you know, still a great game.
Yeah, it's mostly my opinion on that too. Just because, like how much I love certain Castlevania games is based off of, you know, battles that I think goes over my difficulty threshold, and that werewolf battle was one of them.
Yeah, it's really cool, but it's also really unfair. Like it's designed. See, that's the thing. Castlevania, the original, is designed around Simon Belmont's skill set and his mechanics. Whereas that werewolf battle, like as cool as it is, it also is really unfair. Like the speed of it, the variability of it, the angles from which the werewolf can attack. It's extremely unfair. It just, you know, that version of Simon can't take it on. That would be a great Alucard battle, but it's kind of sucks for that Simon. But that said, it's so cool.
I don't know if I've ever seen it. I'll have to look this up when we're done here.
You can still get it on the PS3. It's easily accessible. Yeah. The PlayStation version, so it's still out there.
I think you can sideload it onto PSP and Vita also.
Oh, hey, that's good to know. So that's my problem solved right there. Yeah, so original Castlevania, I guess, A-tier, no real problems going on there.
Agreed.
Yeah. This one, you're not going to agree with, Kurt, I already know. I put Castlevania Order of Ecclesia, which was for the DS in 2008. It was, I guess this was the end of Igarashivania as we knew it, outside of Bloodstained. In fact, I would say the heroine of Ecclesia, Shinoa, basically became Miriam. They look and act alike. The monster skill capture system from Aria also made it into Bloodstained. Like, we'll get into that. But I really liked Ecclesia. I liked Shinoa. I think that Albus looks a lot like Wynn Butler from the Arcade Fire. And to this day, I don't know if that was done on purpose or not. You don't like it much, Kurt?
I don't hate it. I think it's actually better than Dawn of Sorrow. I just like Portrait better. Mm-hmm. I thought the levels, again, like, Igarashi was always, like, trying his best to do what he can with the budget he had, and as a result, some of the levels ended up feeling really bloated. And that was a consistent problem. Like, Portrait had that same problem, but it was all backloaded. The levels I thought were a little bit too big and too long. It's more difficult, which is good because a lot of the Metroidvanias are too easy, but yeah, not always in great ways. The boss fights in particular were, I thought, a little rough by the end. I like the art, though. The art is much better than the last two entries. The music is really good also. I mean, I talked it down earlier a bit, but I wouldn't argue it too much down from here. Like, maybe a B+, just because I like Portrait better. But no, it's a solid game.
Yeah, I think the one thing I really didn't like about it was there was a Shadow of Colossus-style boss somewhere in there, and everyone was doing Shadow of the Colossus without really knowing how to do Shadow of the Colossus. So we just basically had a lot of physics messes with bosses that were too big. Parrish, what do you think?
This is the only Igarashi game I've never finished. I always lose steam a few hours in. I find it really tedious, and I don't know. There's just something about this game that I can't connect with. It doesn't do what I want Castlevania to do. Mm. And so, like, as much as I think the systems are interesting, I think it looks great. I like the story and how it really diverges from the usual, hey, guess what? Dracula's back. Gonna go kill him. Let's go get him, Belmonts. Like, it tries, but I don't know. Every time I play, and I've tried so many times to get through this, I run out of steam. And so to me, this is B tier.
Hmm. I guess we can compromise and kind of banish it to the void between A and B. And I'd be happy enough with that. I just remember having really good feelings about Ecclesia at the time. And if I had known that it was the last Igarashi, maybe I wouldn't have had those good feelings. I don't know. it is a complicated game emotional wise, but it's fun. If you have it on your DS, go for it. You can't go wrong, really. As for the last one on the A tier, Castlevania 3, Dracula's Curse. This almost became an S game, but this probably isn't fair of me. I knocked it down a bit because of the westernization things that they did to warn people away from renting the game, and it made it such a slog to play through again.
You are absolutely correct. I mean, again, I love this game just because it was the first, like, Castlevania game I really got into. And there were so many different characters and so many different routes to go, and it just felt like a really big epic adventure. But some of the levels are really miserable.
Yeah, I think that when I replayed the game recently and I realized, holy crap, when you die to Dracula, you go all the way back to the start of the level, not to the staircase. I just lost my mind. I said, how did I do this when I was a kid? I must have been insane.
Oh, geez.
Insanity counts for a lot. You probably used the one sop they gave to American kids, which was, you know, they took out all the cool stuff, like the soundtrack and Grant as a worthwhile character, but they didn't give us Help Me.
Help Me. That's right. We did get Help Me. And you're absolutely right. That's the only way I could ever finish that game. And it's funny that you said Grant sucks. I mean, he does, but he was the one I think I ultimately used to finish the game, which is mean to get the worst ending. But just in the fact that you have to look at Grant instead of Alucard or Sypha, that's the only thing we're ranking it by here. But I'm going to get a lot.
He made jumping a lot easier, though. And you could bypass so many areas just by climbing over them.
Yeah, the aqueduct area, that's basically just Grant's playground.
Yeah.
Or Sypha's, you know, the water comes down, you freeze it, you walk on top. It's pretty awesome.
Oh, that's right. She can do that. Yeah. I forgot about that.
There's a lot of variability in how you approach the game based on the characters you use. It's surprising that Alucard is actually maybe the worst character to take along because he's very, very weak and he's very limited in how he can fly. But at the same time, his area, like his path really, really sucks. And like it is the bad part of the game, the falling block area. So you kind of need Alucard to get through that area and just say like, yeah, F this. I'm out of here and just fly past. Like if you go Alucard's route and then are like, yeah, peace out, Alucard. You can just sleep here in your coffin forever. I'm going to hang out with Grant instead or Sypha. God, I can't imagine trying to get through the falling block areas with Sypha. That is. That is an exercise in self-abuse. Like,
someone must be able to do it, but...
Oh, I'm sure. There's probably someone who can do a blindfold for awesome games, but, you know, that's not me. I'm not that person.
No,
but I do think this is a, you know, despite the knocks on especially Alucard's route, and as you say, the kind of the, not neutering, but definitely the weakening of the game for the American version, it's still amazing. Like, this is Castlevania's Super Mario Brothers 3. It's just that original concept exploded, expanded, you know, developed into new and exciting ways, like three times bigger as an adventure. But then, you know, with replayability, different paths to take, different characters to use. Can you beat the game with just Trevor? Is that, you know, is that a thing you can do? And I was crazy enough as a kid that I did it. And I was like, it's just the same ending, but with just Trevor. Okay, well, that's not interesting.
He's wearing a cloak.
He is wearing a cloak. He, you know, there's like a music player on the title screen. And even though the soundtrack is different in the US version, it's not necessarily worse. It's just, you know, like standard NES chiptunes as opposed to like NES chiptunes plus awesome upgraded
reverb
bonus sounds. It's a great game.
The soundtrack is worthy of a mention on its own because I just remember being blown away by, I think Rising is the tower theme or one of the tower themes where you're climbing the tower and it's kind of falling at the same time. Not to be confused with the Falling Blocks level, but is one of my favorite pieces of Castlevania music. And it actually sounds better on the NES versus the Super Famicom, which is not to put down the Super Famicom soundtrack because that also just, that chip added so much to the soundtrack. But
no, it sounds amazing, but it is just the Famicom, not the Super Famicom.
Oh, I'm sorry, the Super Famicom? Okay, yeah, Famicom. But yeah, it does sound quite amazing.
It is a Super Famicom game.
It is. There you go. Super Famicom game. How about you, Kurt? What do you think?
Yeah, I definitely agree with this. I don't know. If we were to rank Akamaju Densetsu, would we put that in S tier? Because I kind of think that. But it also, like, the Alucard problem is the same thing even in that version of the game. It's just their little tweak. Like, you know what? The last level, I'm sure if you played it over and over, you remember, like, the pendulum is swinging right before you get to Dracula's room, and there's a bat there.
There sure is. There sure is.
That bat is not there in the Japanese version, so that is very indicative in the sort of just annoying changes that they made to that game.
Oh my god. I think it was your site that I visited where I first realized, wow, they really changed a lot in the English version of the game. And the thing that you mentioned that I remember and I still don't get is the font for the stats. They were changed like from this like kind of gothic thing to this more blocky standardized text, and that's just such a weird thing to change.
I think it looks cooler in the American version, but they did that for Super Castlevania 4 too. It has a different font. It has a different like whip sound effect. I think just say it since they had more time to polish it, they were like, yeah, just make this change. Why not?
So even if we were just, you know, going on the Japanese version, Akamaju Densetsu, I would still put this in the A tier just because Rondo of Blood, Dracula X, is the realization of what this game wanted to be in a lot of ways.
That's true.
And it does this game even better. But, you know, this is the absolute high point of 8-bit Castlevania. Like, no question. Especially when the competition is Game Boy games.
That's true, yeah. And the graphics were just incredible for... I still think to this day that Konami was the company that best knew how to use the NES's color palette. They just were so incredible at making, like... Just, like, say, for example, like a mossy wall out of, like, some gray and some splotches of green. It was just... They knew what they were doing, and it made for such like an interesting series, such an interesting kind of gothic haunting series for, God, like just such a little humble system. They're really good at what they did. It's disappointing where things have gone.
Hey, Lassie, what are you doing here? Timmy's in a well. Sequelcast 2 and Friends is a podcast looking at movies in a franchise, one film at a time, like Harry Potter, Hellraiser, and The Hobbit. And sometimes the hosts talk about video games and TV as well. And now it's part of the Greenlit Podcast Network. Oh, Lassie, we don't need to rescue Timmy. He likes the well enough, I guess. Darth Vader is Luke's father. Lassie, I told you to lay off the spoilers.
Video Death Loop is a podcast where we watch a short video clip on loop until we just can't take it anymore. Along the way, we'll try our best to make each other laugh and to hold out longer than the other guy. You can jump in on any episode, no need to worry about continuity. Check out Video Death Loop on the Greenlit Podcast Network with new episodes every Friday.
Well, speaking of Rondo of Blood, that means we are getting into the final tier, the S tier, and that is games that are as beautiful as the friendship between Dracula and Death. So you know it's genuine, is loving, is perfect. First game I put on the S tier, Area of Sorrow, 2003, GBA. This was the first GBA game that I think really got it, like in terms of the Castlevania games, and it really springboarded off Castlevania Symphony of the Night in all the best ways. And it still has some weaknesses, of course, like the graphics couldn't be as fancy, the game couldn't be as big. And of course, the soundtrack, even though it couldn't be orchestrated, it was still incredible for the Game Boy Advance, like the Hanging Gardens theme. That's still one of my favorite pieces of music in the whole series.
I would hesitate to put this on the S tier just because it's going to be on the same rank as, this is a small spoiler, Symphony of the Night. I don't.
Oh, gas! How dare you?
I mean, there's nowhere else to go. Come on.
And I don't think it really matches up to that level. Design wise, it is more polished.
Yes.
But I mean, the visuals and the sound are such an intrinsic part of why Symphony Night is so good. And even though like Aria is way better than the other Game Boy Advance games, it just never quite reaches that level. It had that futuristic setting, which I don't feel that they really took advantage of. But then again, back in when this game came out, 2035 seemed like so far away, and now it's just like, it's another decade away. It's probably
Even live to see 2035. Let's hope so.
Yeah, and it was done for some good story reasons that they never quite followed up on, because Igarashi just did other stuff, which is fine. I would maybe
just imagine if we had gotten the 1999 Castlevania Adventure instead of Nano Breaker.
Yeah.
Don't make me sad. This is my show. Don't make me sad on my show.
I would put it as an A tier, just to make room for the others. But no, it's an excellent game.
I'm going to disagree with Kurt and say it does belong here on the S tier because context does matter. And this game is as good as you could have gotten on GBA. Like, you have to take technology into account. I strongly believe the Game Boy games could have been better. I've played some goddamn good Game Boy games. Why couldn't they have been like, on the level of Wario Land or something? Like, it was possible. But this game, I can't think of a better looking, better playing, deeper, more mechanically satisfying GBA game. Like, this game has it all for that platform. We know the confines of 240 by 160 pixels and however tiny that ROM is and no built-in audio system. Like, all the things going against this game, and yet it manages to provide a Symphony of the Night style experience. It does an interesting twist on the, hey, there's some kind of thing that's going to be different toward the end of the game where you have to find the secret ending. And, it doesn't wear out its welcome. The soul system is really cool and deeply integrated into the storyline. It's part of, the plot twist, the huge plot twist about the character, and everything kind of comes to a head and makes sense. It does interesting things, I think, with the setting. You're not like shooting laser. Actually, yes, you actually can get a laser gun. It's not taking place in a skyscraper or something. It's still Dracula's castle, but you have basically like a televangelist who thinks that he's the reincarnation of Dracula and is running around fighting you, like this, basically deranged Christian leader guy who's kind of starting his own cult around the fact that he's Dracula. That's interesting. You know, there's like soldiers and stuff who have machine guns. They're zombies. They were killed by Dracula's forces during the big war that we never actually saw. There's you know, the whole question of what happened to a Belmont. Also, why is there this guy running around in like a Victorian loungewear? can you believe these things all come together toward the end? No, it's really good. It's a really cool game. Great secrets. Just an awesome, varied mechanic system that you know, takes the versatility that was kind of, you know, introduced with the DSS system in Circle of the Moon, and, you know, expanded on with Portrait or Harmony of Dissonance, but then just takes it to, like, not just a whole other level, but like three levels above that. There's just so much you can do with this game, so many ways to play. I mean, you can build out Soma to be whoever you want. And it has great hooks into Castlevania lore. Not that there's, you know, a whole lot of background for them to build on. And, you know, basically everything that could be accounted for is accounted for by the end of the story. Like, hey, it's, you know, we've seen elements from basically every storyline from Castlevania. But it feels like this is where Igarashi finally said, you know what? Now I see what was good about Symphony, what people love, what was successful. And let's strip out all the crap from Harmony that didn't work. Let's just make a beautiful game that just has so many ways to play, so much depth, has a really cool story twist. I don't know. Like, it's really hard to beat this game. I would argue that it might be better than Symphony. I don't know.
Oh, no, that is controversial right there.
I said might. I'm hedging my bets. I'm a weenie. I can't make that kind of commitment.
I understand, because I know exactly how you feel. I feel like Symphony, as much as I loved it, it had some really awkward things like the menu system and the inventory system. Just it was a little bit, you know, it needed a little bit more polishing. And Area took that little bit of extra polish and applied it. I replayed the game recently, and I just really had a great time with it. Like, I got into it the way that I don't get into a lot of Metroidvanias. Even though I knew it was coming, I just enjoyed myself from beginning to end, and I finished it, and I said, oh my god, this Castlevania series never concluded with the storyline, and that makes me sad.
You know, at some point in the past, I traded my Harmony of Dissonance and Aria of Sorrow away for the Castlevania double pack. And I don't know why I did that, because it's not like I ever play Harmony of Dissonance. I just want Aria of Sorrow. So that's the only one I play.
I think that's the version I own.
But I do have like some obnoxiously complete save files in my Castlevania double pack, because I played through Aria of Sorrow so many times on the original cartridge, and then just like scraped every bit of content out of it that I could for, you know, the double pack version. And as soon as the Analog Pocket comes out, whenever that happens to happen, I will be absolutely sticking the Castlevania double pack in there again and playing more Aria of Sorrow.
I think that's a good choice. I think that's a very good thing to do, Parrish.
Oh, I'm very happy with my life choices.
Do you have anything to say additionally about Area of Sorrow, Kurt, or are you just like, okay, you can
feel free to take me down a peg?
I mean, I could only really take down Area of Sorrow by talking up Symphony of the Night, so
right, which we're gonna get to.
It's still an excellent game, so I can't really disparage it at all.
Okay, so we'll move on to the one that you're both going to hate me for, which is Castlevania IV, 1991 for the SNES. Now, I have to defend myself here, Parrish. When you said it's a remake, I plumb forgot it's a remake, because to me, it's still Castlevania IV. It's still that canon that was totally made up for this game. It's not a remake to me, and I know it is, and I know I should have realized that when I put this game in the rankings, but it just bounced right off me. I completely forgot about that.
Simon, trapped forever in a time loop.
Yeah, pretty much. I've destroyed him. Now it's Judgment that won't destroy him. It's my time loop, my made-up time loop. Judgment isn't on this list, by the way. You probably surmised by now.
That's not the triple S rank?
Okay, you've exposed my secret. The triple S rank is Judgment. Yeah, I know you guys... Well, I'm not sure about you, Kurt. Parrish, I know you're not a huge fan of 4. I just love 4. I would actually play it over the original any day of the week. I love the soundtrack. I think the weird-ass whip mechanics are so much fun. I think the level design's a lot of fun. I love climbing up that stupid waterfall every single time, even though I recognize it is a little bit tedious. I don't care. Something about it just brings me so much inner peace. What do you think, Kurt?
I like the vibe of it, but it does have a lot of design growing pains from the 16-bit era. Like, this is one of the showcases of the Super Nintendo when it came out. And it does look really cool and it sounds really cool, but more on a technical level. And also artistic, but gameplay wise, Simon is a little bit too big. His whip never feels quite proportionally correct. A lot of the boss battle games are like look really cool, but they're not really all that well designed. They're just like they're difficult to avoid. You kind of just have to get in as much damage as possible before they take you down. The music like showed off what the Super Nintendo sound chip could do, but it didn't really have that classic Konami sound to it. Like, outside of, like, the first level theme, there's not really much in the way of music that I would put in, like, the great Castlevania tier.
Really? Oh, God. It has the best remix of Bloody Tears.
Oh, I mean, like some of those remixes are good, but it's, like the most imposing theme of that game is just where it's, like, drums pounding. What's, like, you know, drum pounding.
Oh, yeah, those freaking kettle drums. I love them so much. I want to hug them.
It sounds really cool, but it's not, like, you know, if I compare it to, like, a Bloodline song, it's, like, it's not something I'm going to listen to in my car.
I'm the opposite. I would put the entire set. In fact, you know what? My parents and I share a Spotify account. I'm going to go fill it up right now with Castlevania 4 music. So my dad will put it on, turn it on, look for the Eagles, and it'll be like Castlevania. And he'll be like, what the hell is wrong? What's going on here? Nadia? Thank you for this idea, Kurt. I appreciate it.
It's good Halloween music. Like, you could pump it out in your yard and it'll sound cool, but it's not really, really what I would put on a Castlevania soundtrack.
I'm just so the theme where you're walking up to Dracula's castle is just so chilling. I never ever get tired of it. I play through the game just to hear that theme.
But yeah, it's also the difficulty level is it's not like you could stroll through most of it, and when it is hard, it doesn't feel like it's hard in good ways. Like the section right at the end where you're you know, you're going on the stairs and the stairs are collapsing behind you and there's that little buzzsaw or whatever that's climbing after you. And then the floating platforms, like, I don't think that level is particularly well designed at all.
That is kind of a weird, that is a bit of a weird level. Some of the jumps are really shady. Like, you can be off by like a few pixels and you won't even make it.
I also have a little bit of that Sega resentment because back at the time, like Bloodlines, it got really disparaged for not looking as good, like its characters were smaller, but I also think that's why Bloodlines is better because it just feels better. I like the music better. It's decent, but I would put this at like a B tier.
Goodness gracious me. No, I go to the room of 4 associates and every single time I'd feel a chill go down my back. Do you have anything additional to say, Parrish? In my defense, preferably.
No, I can't defend you on this one. I will say that I strongly, strongly disagree with Kurt's opinion about the music, but my thoughts on the soundtrack are a matter of record that I don't need to litigate again. You don't want to hear it again. I just think it's a great soundtrack, but that's the only part of this game that I really, really love. Like, okay, I love the atmosphere, but, you know, some of what Kurt said is spot on. You know, there are design flaws. Simon being way too big is a huge issue. Like, it's really cool that they made such a big sprite kind of do that like marionette puppet thing. They gave him a whip that's so versatile and so capable of doing everything, but it kind of breaks the game because there's only like maybe a quarter of the screen that Simon's whip can't reach. He's like ridiculously overpowered just with his basic weapon. And yeah, it basically moots the need for sub-weapons, except in some bosses where it's like, okay, yeah, I want to be able to move away while throwing axes. But the axes don't actually give you that much more diagonal range than just whipping diagonally. Likewise, the boomerangs don't have much more horizontal range than your whip. Like, the advantage, I guess, is that sometimes they'll pass through enemies and then track back so you get 2 hits. Or, multiple hits. But
if you got the triple trouble equipped or whatever they call it, like, it just demolishes everything.
That's a Sonic game. You're letting your other fandom leak through, Nadia. No, I mean, the multipliers help, but the thing is about multipliers is that you have to use weapons to get multipliers, and I don't want to use the weapons because they're not as good as the whip. Like, just give me the whip. Like, it, you know, there's just a lot of issues like that, and some weird level designs where there's not enough space around Simon to make things interesting. It kind of feels like, you know, I've complained about this on my Game Boy videos about how you'll see people take an NES game, developers take an NES game and say like, hey, let's just translate the sprites from NES to Game Boy, not taking into account the fact that, you know, Game Boy had like a third of the pixels of the NES, if that. So even though, you know, like the pixel resolution of the NES and the Super NES was the same, by making Simon's sprite bigger, it kind of takes on that Game Boy world, that Game Boy issue, like where the world is just too small around the character all of a sudden. So yeah, like this game has a lot of big issues, and, you know, taken as just kind of a friendly stroll through the annual Halloween spooky world, like, it's fine. But I don't think it stands up to the best Castlevania games, just because it just doesn't play well enough. That's where I stand.
I do have to say, I think thematically it does a really interesting thing where you start off at Dracula's gates and you kind of go through his whole grounds. Like, you start with the stables and go through, like, his aqueduct. And I think that was pretty neat. So don't worry, Castlevania IV, I still love you, but I do want to kind of go off on this entry with a little bit of a weird, interesting story. My mother had a head accident a couple of years ago, and she was in the hospital, right? And I'm visiting her, and she says to me, out of the blue, hey, do you remember that Castlevania thing where you could get the secret? And, you know, I'm talking about the staircase secret. And this was a game she never played. She might have kind of watched me, like, glancingly play it once, like, many, many, many years ago. I'm like, how the hell did you even know this? Lying here in a hospital bed, bringing this out of nowhere. And I'm very scared of the human brain is what I'm trying to get at. Fear it. It's totally just a mystifying mystery.
Did you ever watch GamePro TV? Because I remember they did a special on that where they showed, like, the secret at the right before you fight Dracula, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You jump off and the stuff drops from the sky.
I never really watched a lot of GamePro TV. Like, it had, like, weird times in Canada, so we never really watched it. We watched Video Arcade Top 10. Yay, Canada. But that was not something that entered into our family pop culture ever. Like, it was just such a weird, random thing that happened. But speaking of things that aren't weird and random, is our next game, second to last game, Rondo of Blood, 1993, PC Engine. And before I start, I just want to say thank you to Paris for the time he bought the game for full price, imported it, and the game immediately was localized afterwards. So that was a really nice thing you did. Thank you.
Yeah, this began the legend of Jeremy Parrish spending too much money on games that then became much more affordable and easy to acquire. Although that doesn't happen so much anymore, I guess just because these days I'm just buying games for my videos, and there's not really much of a chance that Sega is going to reissue Zaxxon or Dragon Wong for SG-1000 at any point, so...
Probably not.
We're all SOL, sorry about that.
But, I mean, either way, though, like, import or not, we got one of the most incredible Castlevania games ever made. Although, I will admit up front, I recognize it's genius, but it's just not really my favorite Castlevania game. I think I prefer 4 over it.
Indeed. See how it is.
I always just found it a little bit too difficult for me, a little bit too random. I know I'm probably barking up the wrong tree here, but I just never really caught into it. When I do play it, though, I always play as Maria because she's a lot of fun to play.
My walking uphill several miles through snow story is that I played this game, you know, on an emulator because, of course, like, couldn't afford a Turbo Duo even back in the late 90s using a CDR that, like, the guy who helped design the Castlevania dungeon, he burned it for me. I play that with like a 5-level frame skip on my 486 using entirely the keyboard.
Oh, holy crap. What is wrong with you?
I didn't have a gamepad. Gamepads were terrible back then.
They were pretty bad. I had like that.
You needed a Gravis, man.
I still, I mean, we had a computer, but I still didn't have a job, so.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's fair. We had the gamepad where you screw in the little little stick to make it into a little arcade thing or something.
That's the Gravis gamepad.
Okay, so that was Gravis.
It had a purple D-pad, right?
Yes, yes. I think I found our old one, and I looked at it and had a parallel port thing, and I was like, holy crap.
Eventually, I did get one because they released a port of Mega Man X for DOS, and it came with a six-button pad, which wasn't a good pad, but that was afterwards. But no, I mean, it is hard, but I don't think it's too hard. Like, Maria definitely makes it a lot easier just because, like, she can attack with the birds that can usually get in two hits. She could double jump. She doesn't take much damage, but she is basically the game's easy mode. But I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. Like, I think this hits the difficulty balance better than, like, the X68000 game did.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, definitely. Sure.
The death battle at the top of the pirate ship is a little much. The only thing is that the Dracula battle at the end was a little easy, which is something that they overcorrected for in the Super Nintendo port. And one of the things I really appreciate about the PSP remake is that they added a third segment to that battle, which made it a lot more challenging. But no, there are so many great things you can say about this game. Like, it looks incredible. It has, like, the early 90s anime OVA aesthetic.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that was a once-in-a-lifetime thing, especially the TurboGrafx anime aesthetic. Now, that was a real class of its own.
Yeah.
Such fluffy hair.
Such very fluffy
hair. I got to put together the E3 trailer for Limited Run Games' announcement of Rondo of Blood for PC Engine this year.
Oh, cool.
And I had such a great time. Just, like, I took 2 days out of my life, you know, out of my work days to record footage and then splice it together. And then, you know, it took like a month for Konami to say, hey, can you tweak this one little thing? Can you do, oh, also we need this one little thing. Oh, one more little thing, but that's just, you know, that's dealing with any kind of license.
Yeah, it happens.
But yeah, it was just very, very satisfying to put together a promo trailer for this wonderful game. And I, you know, tried to really kind of capture both the excitement of it and the look of it and the sense of humor. Like, you know, everything about Maria is a little bit funny. Like, she's even got a theme that's like samba, you know?
That's true.
And yeah, she is kind of easy mode, but there's something incredibly satisfying about demolishing the armies of the undead with a little girl in a pink dress who, like, powers up with ice cream and throws kittens at you. Like, that's so good. The only part of this game that I find, like, consistently overwhelming is the one dash boss when you take the secret route in the first stage, that serpent on the bridge.
Yeah.
There's just something about the way it moves. I just cannot wrap my brain around it. I've beaten it through persistence, but it's one of those, like, I can never stream that. I've tried it and it's just embarrassing. It's like, you know, I play through the level, I'm cruising, I'm kicking ass, and then I get to the serpent and it just wipes me out again and again. And I'm like,
in front of everyone.
What is wrong with me? I just, like, I can't grasp its movements and the mechanics of that battle. But everything else, you know, I think is typically pretty challenging, but not impossibly so. I love, you know, the little flair that every boss has, where once you kill them, they have some sort of show-off death blow. You know, details like that are a lot of fun. The way there are so many hidden passages, and it's one of those games where you think, I wonder if I can do this. Like, what happens if I try this thing? And sometimes you just die, but sometimes you don't. And, you know, like, if you get sloppy running away from the undead behemoth that chases you through the first stage of the original Castlevania, and you fall into a pit, you don't die. Mm-hmm. You fall into, like, catacombs with fishmen. You're like, oh yeah, this is the catacombs from, you know, the original Castlevania stage 1-2, or, you know, block 2 or whatever it is in the original game. But this time, instead of, you know, having an actual path down, then back up, you're just kind of in the catacombs and it's the alternate route you have to take. There's tons of detail to the enemies. There's unexpected behaviors. Some enemies have multiple behaviors. There's just cool set pieces. The music is great. The bosses are interesting. Mm-hmm. Richter is basically like, I think, you know, Portrait of Ruin called him basically like the greatest of the Belmonts. And this game really, this game really kind of does live up to that, because he acts and attacks and moves and has the skills of like the 8-bit Belmonts, but he's faster. He's more versatile. He can do more and is more responsive and reactive. And yeah, it's just a very satisfying game to play.
His movement is a good midpoint between the two loosey-goosey Simon from Super Castlevania 4 versus the old one, because you can't completely control his jumps, but if you're like on a trajectory, you can hit back and it sort of slows him down. He can't attack upwards, but he can still do that neat little backflip that helps him get away from things. He looks cool. He's like the best Belmont design easily.
Did you guys play the remake, the like basically our first exposure in the West to Rondo of Blood? Like, did you play that when it came out?
Oh yeah, I like it. I always defend like the 2.5D games. Like, they're not really very popular among especially the fan base, because you do lose like the pixel art, which is completely understandable. But I don't think it's bad. They added a lot of neat background details that weren't in the original game. Like, there are spots that are just like flat tile textures that they really crafted and modeled, and they give it a better sense of place. They do make the visuals more consistent with how Symphony of the Night look, which again, it does lose like the bright PC Engine thing, and that's totally reasonable criticism. But I still think it looks pretty cool. The only downgrade is that all these games, they run at a lower frame rate, so they don't feel as smooth. Mm-hmm. And the collision doesn't quite feel right. They changed Richter's backflip, but they also like tuned up some stuff that was never quite finished in the original game. Like I said before, they added the extra Dracula battle at the end. There was one level that is only accessible after you've beaten the game. That's not like a real stage. I think it was just like cobbled together about stuff that they were working on when they were able to complete. But they created a whole new level for it.
Right.
And I kind of wish that more developers would take the attitude towards remakes. Like, you know, when you think about Chrono Trigger had, you know, stuff that was cut out. Mm-hmm. You know, like the Singing Mountain and that song that was. So it would have been really cool if, you know, when they reported it somewhere, they would have gone back to the original design documents, like, oh, we have some more time. Let's implement this. When they add additional content, like the Atlas games, it doesn't always work out very well. But I do appreciate that it really is a completely separate experience.
Right.
Like, it doesn't replace the original game. Like, you shouldn't play this over another. Like, the PC Engine one's still a little bit better, but I think it's a really good accompaniment.
Yeah, and Rondo of Blood, it's an interesting segue because it ties into our number one game, which is not a surprise. It's Symphony of the Night, and I'm kind of just mentioning it casually because, number one, why the hell not? We all knew it was coming. Number two, Rondo of Blood, how confused were you when you first played Symphony of the Night and saw what was going on in the quote-unquote Bloodlines introduction? Because I was just like, there are three different Castlevania games going on here, and I'm not familiar with at least two of them.
Since I had run the Castlevania dungeon, I knew what it was supposed to be.
Okay.
So even though I knew that they translated it, it's not necessarily a wrong translation, but because it coincidentally had the name of a previous Genesis game, it did kind of cross the lines.
Yeah, when I first played Symphony, I was like, Bloodlines, isn't that a Genesis game? Didn't that happen someone completely different from whoever who this jackhole is? Because, well, I had no idea who Richter was. I knew Alucard from 3, but he looked completely different, of course, in Symphony. So it was a very confusing game narratively at first, especially when, oh no, Dracula's about to kill me. Who's this little girl? Why is she throwing dragons at me? It was an experience, all right, and I was kind of thankful when it started with Alucard. I'm like, okay, this I understand. Drawbridges I understand. Long hallways I understand.
Yeah, I had never beaten either Rondo of Blood or Bloodlines at that point, so I was like, hey, it's like some sort of Castlevania history that I don't know about, but I get it. I'm a Belmont dude, and I'm kicking Dracula's ass at the beginning of the game. That's pretty neat. This was the first game I ever imported, and I did not know a whole lot of Japanese at that point. Not that I know a ton now, but I, you know, have some competency. Whereas at the time, I was like, duh. So I just kind of went along with it and was like, well, I think I'm equipping good stuff. The numbers are going up. That seems good. So I was just kind of along for the ride, and it looked great. It sounded amazing. It played really, really well. There was a huge castle for me to run around in and get lost. And then eventually I found the double jump pendant and I was like, yeah, I can double jump. That's the best thing ever. So very satisfying video game.
Yeah, it's hard to talk about Symphony just because it's been praised over and over and over again, and we're probably all just rehashing territory, but I still love to gush about certain things. Like, I remember being shocked the first time I played the game and entered the cathedral and saw how peaceful it was, because you think, oh, you're going to a vampire's cathedral, it's going to have, like, upside-down stars and, you know, Jesus crucified upside down or whatever. It's going to be blood and fire. But no, it's just a very – one of my favorite levels. Just the music's fantastic. It's so peaceful. It has that really, really creepy confessional where to this day some people say, like, when you sit as the priest and one of the women comes up and cries, some people say that's Alucard's mother. And I don't know if that's true or not, but I think this is a really awesome piece of lore to even think about. Yeah, it just – the game really – redefined for me what Castlevania can be, because I had been off the series for quite a while by the time I got to Symphony, and so I was familiar with, you know, gothic stone structures and blood and fire and everything. But no, Dracula's castle, despite being quote unquote a creature of chaos, has always been just so fascinating because it's so many things in such a little space. And if you had told me as a kid, oh, here's a game in Dracula's castle, I think, okay, well, you think of Castlevania 1, you think of Castlevania 3, here's a hallway with some axe knights, but no, it's just really its own living thing, and then it flips upside down and you get to do it all over again.
And then you do get the upside down stars and the upside down Jesus. So see, it works out. It's exactly what you expected.
A lot of people criticize the upside down castle for being like too much of the same, but I actually adore the way that the, like, just what they do to make the labyrinth, like the lowest area of the game, like the catacombs, sorry, and turn it into something completely creepy and different when it's up in, like, you know, in the sky of the upside down castle, like the, like, sort of bluish green lava instead of the red stuff, like, and the music that they use, just incredible.
Yeah, I mean, when people complain about Symphony of the Night's inverted castle, like, that's a very ahistoric complaint. I mean, at the time, it was just unprecedented. No game had done something like that. It was so audacious and surprising. Like, oh, I beat the game, but the ending was kind of weird. I feel like something was off. And then you realize what you have to do. And, you know, all of a sudden, there's not quite twice as much game, because it's much faster to work your way through the inverted castle. You have all your navigational skills, like, Alucard doesn't really power up in the inverted castle. It's just a matter of, like, finding your way around, getting through, like, the laser skeletons, beating some of the really, really overwhelming bosses, checking out the Easter eggs, you know, like the fact that the bosses you beat are the key bosses you beat are the bosses from the original Castlevania, but you're collecting the parts of Dracula from Castlevania 2.
Yeah, and you fight
revenants that are pretending to be the cast of Castlevania 3 who fought along Alucard hundreds of years ago. Like, there's just, it's such a loving take on Castlevania as a whole. Like, it really, you know, it's kind of hard to top this game just because it stopped and said, let's take inventory on 10 years of history and create a game that encompasses all of that, but with a new way of playing, with, you know, these really impressive next generation graphics that they combine, you know, the best of what the PlayStation could do with 2D, plus adding a lot of polygonal elements that seem like 2D, like really kind of taking a page from what Nintendo did with Yoshi's Island and the Super FX 2 chip, and using 3D effects to fake really, really cool 2D. Yeah, like they really put a lot of thought into this and kind of created the ultimate summation of everything that is Castlevania, while at the same time saying, like, hey, here's a new direction for Castlevania. That's unusual. Like, you don't see that happen very often with any property, and it is a rare accomplishment. And to say, well, you know, it'd be neat if the massive amount of bonus content they gave us as a surprise twist, you know, if they had spent another year of development to make it even better and gone way over budget, like, how come they didn't do that? Come on.
Right.
Like, you got to be realistic.
Yeah, I mean, I can't be the only one who entered the upside down castle and thought, okay, well, Dracula's going to be in the throne room right here. Oh, he's not there. Well, you know, I'll just keep on going. Surely this can't be the whole castle. And it was the whole castle.
I did have it spoiled for me because, like, I didn't import it because, again, I couldn't afford to chip my PlayStation or get an import a copy of the game. So I knew it was going to happen, but I still was looking forward to it. Because again, like, the game isn't very long. Like, you could beat the first castle in, like, a couple of hours. Mm-hmm. So just having, you know, that extension and, you know, it made it feel like it was more worthwhile. But I think one of the reasons this game is so good is it is at the edges. Like, they just shove so much weird, strange little stuff into it. And that there are other, like, technical issues also that, I almost say technical issues, but fairly early on, there were tools that you could extract the audio files for the game. Yeah. You can listen to all the voices and stuff. And there was all this dialogue that, you know, Maria could turn evil and you would have to fight her. And of course, that was stuff that they, you know, probably had like an early version of the game design that didn't get implemented. But we didn't know that at the time. So, you know, you think, like, is there something secretly hidden? Is there something else you have right. to do? Because there was, you know, to get the whole holy glasses to, you know, quote unquote, beat Richter to get to the second part of the game. And again, if they did properly remake Castlevania, that would be something cool. Like, I think that would be more interesting than the two version of Playable Maria's we ended up getting. okay, just because there is so much strange, weird stuff, I think is what makes it a little bit better than the DS and Game Boy Advance games. Like, it didn't feel like they had that much time to put those, a lot of, like, they're still there, but they're not as much of them. So even right. though, like, Symphony of the Night is really messy, as far as its design, it's, you could very, very easily steamroll it, but that's also why it's so fun. Like, I don't think these games need to be balanced. Like, if you're talking about those classic Hellions, yeah, those are okay, but this isn't meant to be like that. That's like one of the reasons why it's like an RPG, that you could just do all this, mm-hmm. the weird stuff, like all the weird shield rod stuff where you could summon a cow and increase your defense. Or,
wasn't the shield rod bug, like, where you combine the shield rod and Alucard's shield and he becomes basically like an unstoppable force? Wasn't that like from a bug testing thing that they forgot to take out? So it's basically the Konami code all over again.
I don't know, but it would certainly make sense.
It actually, I think I heard that on John Learned's annotated history of Castlevania on YouTube, which is really, really excellent. I recommend it wholly if you haven't listened to it yet. But yeah, something like that seemed to be the case. And but you're right, it had so much. It had a lot of weird stuff, like you said. The cow like would increase your defense by a couple of points. And I like the fact that you could go to the tower, and sometimes there'd be a bird there building a nest, and you could look through the telescope, and sometimes there'd be the ferryman there. Sometimes there'd be a fish jumping out of the water. Just so many like little loving details that I still catch things when I play the game. And I only just recently learned, for example, that in the tower, you can find a hidden pair of jewel knuckles and completely break the game from like hour one.
Aren't there the boots that say that they make you higher, but they actually just add an extra pixel?
Pixel.
They're the secret boots. They discreetly increase your height, and that's exactly what they do. There's no gameplay advantage. It just makes Alucard look a little taller than anyone.
The only good thing I have to say about the Saturn version is that they did add like some extra boots that make you run faster in the second part of the game. I wish that
that's cool.
When they redid the PSP version, that was something I wish they carried forward.
Yeah, I agree with that. And speaking of the PSP version, which translation do you prefer? PSP or the original Die Monster? You don't belong in this world.
Original, for sure. like it's just, yeah, the acting is bad. But it's a fun translation. Like, I was going and doing some comparisons to the original Japanese dialogue, and it's very just like standard. Mm-hmm. But it does give a very like goofy Shakespearean sort of stuff. And it's not like Castlevania is a super, super serious series.
No.
Like it works in its context. And the PSP version, they didn't even really retranslate it. They just rewrote the dialogue.
Right. To make it less awkward sounding.
Yeah. And like the voice acting is, I guess, better. And it's not as lovably bad, but I don't think it has the personality.
Yeah, I see where you're coming from. And they also did retranslate some of the monster names, if I'm not mistaken. To this day, I don't know why Legion became Grand Falloon, but I think it's an amazing change.
I think just because Jeremy Blaustein really liked Kurt Vonnegut.
Okay, that would explain everything then.
He also had really Lord of the Rings things, because there's a lot of Tolkien references there.
Yeah, I think like half the blades are named after like Tolkien blades. No, it's a very charming little localization. I actually kind of know the guy who relocalized it, and he said like, "Oh well, we thought the localization was pretty well written," and it was. I mean, it absolutely was. But you can't deny that die, monster, you don't belong in this world, a thing. And that's what they kind of did. They didn't give you an option to go back to the original. And it's like, Konami, you can't pull one over on us. We were there. We heard it all with our own God-cursed ears. You can't run away from it. I actually asked Igarashi, hey, are you kind of tired of the memes of die, monster? And he's like, I think it's funny, but I think it's time to move on, basically. Good luck. Mr. Parrish, do you have anything additional to add about this wonderful, wonderful game? And do you both agree that it should be at the number one spot?
Definitely.
I don't know about number one spot, but it's, you know, definitely S tier. It deserves to be up at the top. It's one of the greats. But there are several one of the greats in Castlevania history. And, you know, if we take Super Castlevania 4 out of this S tier, I don't know how it got there, but you're left with Aria of Sorrow, Rondo of Blood, and Symphony of the Night. And those are three absolutely tremendous games. Just, it's really hard to top that combination of action, exploration. Just it really scratches a certain itch, and I would love for them to make more Castlevania games of that caliber, or of any caliber really, but especially of that caliber at some point. But I guess until then we have Bloodstained.
Yeah, which is good. Like, I like Bloodstained, but I would absolutely love to have an experience like Castlevania Symphony of the Night again, which I guess is hard to replicate because, of course, we all have the nostalgia for it, but I go back and I play it all the time. It's still fantastic, despite a few flaws here and there. Like, I have no problem putting it as my number one. And I really, really thank you two gentlemen for joining me on this ranking. We did not get down to teeth and nails as much as I thought we would, but I think we had some great discussions overall.
Yeah, that's what happens when you curate the discussion to be only people who agree with you.
That's true. That's actually very
true.
The
secret of being online.
There's got to be someone out there who's really going to go to bat for Haunted Castle, but I don't know where to find them.
There's always someone.
Yeah, check your local, I don't know. I was going to say something mean, but I shouldn't. I'm not going to be mean. Castlevania, why be mean about it? Just be happy. Such good games.
I agree. There's a lot to be happy about here. And of course, you can get the collections. They're available on Switch and whatnot. They're pretty good. I actually have the PlayStation collection. That's Rondo of Blood and Symphony of the Night together. And that's certainly a game they released.
And Castlevania Requiem, that's coming from Limited Run Games, actually, sometime in the future. I don't know exactly when, but we are publishing it for PS4, I believe. So not to, you know, promote that too heavily, but
it will exist. I was going to say, Parrish, this is a good time for you to promote what you want to promote.
That's one of them. And you can go back to Limited Run's YouTube channel and watch the trailer that I put together for Rondo of Blood, because it's great. I love it.
It's a very good trailer.
But that's what I got to say. You know, I do other stuff like Retronauts and videos, but you know the drill.
Yes, you did. And thank you for letting me borrow Retronauts for this episode. And hopefully
you're in for a penny, in for a pound. So tell us how we can support Retronauts, Nadia.
Well, you can support Retronauts at patreon.com/retronauts. And that is the URL, right? I'm getting this right. So
yes, that is correct.
Hooray. So if you support the Retronauts Patreon, you get a whole bunch of cool extra stuff. And you will also hear future episodes by myself. I can't say how often I'm coming back, but rest assured, I am coming back for you all. So just leave with one eye open, please. Kurt, please tell us where we can find you.
So I run Hardcore Gaming 101 with that hardcoregaming101.net. On Twitter, it's HG_101. We put out a whole bunch of video game related books, including one on Castlevania, which is a little old by this point, but it's not like we've seen a whole lot of actual Castlevania news, so it's not that outdated. We also have a podcast called The Top 47,858 Games of All Time, which is sort of like this podcast, but for every game ever made.
Awesome.
So not really like this podcast.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, yeah, we duke it out about rankings, but we talk about a specific game and then put it on an overall list.
Well, you can find me over at Axe of the Blood God. It's an RPG podcast. We cover RPGs, old, new, Eastern, Western. I also host the Charlene Dropout's Final Fantasy XIV podcast, which is part of the Blood God umbrella. So either way, if you want to support any of our stuff, just go to patreon.com/bloodgodpod. So we're coming up with a new episode of Charlene Dropouts quite soon, which is timely because Endwalker, the next expansion of Final Fantasy XIV is coming out. Currently, players are noticing a hole in the moon. So if you want to talk to us about that hole in the moon, please listen and please interact with us. We will tell you all about the hole in the moon. But for now, this has been myself and Parrish and Kurt Catala just talking about Castlevania and ranking this stuff and having a great time of it. I hope you had a great time of it.
All right. Maybe I'll update the Castlevania Dungeon again when this comes out. This will be the the seminal moment.
So until next time, or until Kurt updates the dungeon, thanks for listening.